The U.S. and Mexico have their outline of a trade deal, but tough negotiations with Canada resume today. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Canadian officials sit down with U.S. trade representatives today in an effort to hash out their differences in a possible NAFTA overhaul. Many differences. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says Canada will not budge on two key issues. First, insisting the new NAFTA keep something like the current dispute resolution process, which involves private panels of investigators that settle NAFTA disagreements. Second, Trudeau is insisting the new NAFTA keep cultural exemptions, protecting Canadian media from U.S. takeovers.
It is inconceivable to Canadians that an American network might buy Canadian media affiliates, whether it's newspaper or TV stations or TV networks. It would be a giving up of our sovereignty and our identity.
President Trump is threatening to exclude Canada from the renegotiated NAFTA. The Trump administration is aiming to submit final NAFTA language to Congress by the end of this month.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Let me check the markets. The 100-share index in London is down 0.5%. S&P and NASDAQ futures are each down 0.3%. Crude oil is back down below $70, $68.90 a barrel, with that big storm in the Gulf losing energy inland. Preparations for the storm curbed about 9% of daily crude production in the Gulf. Later this morning, Congress is set to vote on a bill that would require student borrowers to receive financial counseling each and every year. That means online or in-person sessions for any student with a federal loan or a Pell Grant. The proposal comes as student debt is topping $1.4 trillion and default rates keep growing. Marketplace's Justin Ho reports.
Right now, students who get a federal loan have to complete an online financial counseling session when they enter college and when they graduate. Damon Jones at the University of Chicago says that counseling doesn't take a lot into account.
If you change your major or things change, or the economy changes, new information might be beneficial.
Annual counseling would cover topics like how interest accrues, budgeting, and the consequences of defaulting. That can haunt people for years, says Colleen Campbell at the Center for American Progress.
You could be prevented from getting a license in your occupation, which means that you can't get a job in your profession to pay off your student loan.
The average college graduate's debt load is $38,000. The risk of default, though, is much higher among students who drop out and actually owe much less. For them, says Campbell,
really what we need to be looking at is improving the technical aspects of the system, making repayment much more straightforward for borrowers and much more automatic.
Adding annual counseling, she says, could overwhelm students already feeling discouraged by their debt. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is able to do what we do every day thanks to funding from public radio stations, foundations, corporate underwriters, and listeners like you. Thank you to all the Marketplace investors who've contributed over the last year for helping keep public service journalism strong. All of us really appreciate your support. This is the month, September, when financial life as we knew it came to an end. Wall Street giant Lehman Brothers went bust on 9/15. All year here on Marketplace, we've been looking at the great financial crisis 10 years on. Divided decade, we call it. Loads of global capital searching for a home, subprime home loans, complex financial derivatives. Well, one effect, home ownership in America is down 5% from its pre-crisis high. The McKinsey Global Institute has a new report on what has changed and what hasn't. One of the authors is McKinsey partner Susan Lund. Ms. Lund, thanks for coming in here.
My pleasure.
How are the banks these days?
Well, the banks are much more stable. The new regulations passed in Europe and in the U.S. have meant that banks have to hold more capital against their loans. And this means that they can have losses in the future and afford to withstand that. They need to hold more liquid assets, so we aren't going to have a liquidity crunch like we saw after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. But with all this capital, they're still struggling to find profitable new business models.
So the post-crisis regulations are a big part of this, as you say. But I mean, it's other things too, right? I mean, we've had low interest rates. It's often hard for banks to make lots of money in the lower interest rate environments.
Absolutely. We've seen less lending, which some people blame the banks, but the banks would say, look, nobody wants to borrow. We've also, of course, had a very weak recovery and subpar economic growth. So there hasn't been a lot of demand for people to take on debt. As you mentioned in the beginning, households have kind of curbed their appetite for debt. For all the households who borrowed too much prior to 2007 and 8, they've now had to pay down debt. So there have been less opportunities on the lending side.
Your report highlights what I think is an irony. I mean, many of us take it as an article of faith that the world keeps getting more interconnected. But you're saying that since the financial collapse in these 10 years, to some extent, we're less connected?
We are definitely less interconnected in financial markets. And that's good news for stability because it means that the problems we may see in Turkey or Argentina are not likely to cause major damage to other banks around the world. There will be some damage, but it won't be like the ripple effect we saw in 2008. Banks are focusing more on domestic markets, so cross-border bank lending is down very sharply since the crisis. If anything, maybe the global financial system got too interconnected, and that is what allowed a crisis that began really in just some small corner of the U.S. mortgage market to ripple out and have worldwide ramifications.
Susan Lund is a partner at the McKinsey Global Institute. The report is called A Decade After the Global Financial Crisis, What Has and Has Not Changed. Susan, thank you.
Thank you.
And what is the McKinsey team worried about now? That report flags debt, including burgeoning corporate debt, as a known risk, harder to pin down risks of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or the risk of cyber attack. That's discussed in the director's cut of that interview, which will soon be at marketplace.org/divided decade. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.